Welcome to the Tax Answers Advisor, where financial healing begins. If you've ever opened a letter from the IRS or the California Franchise Tax Board and felt your stomach drop, if you've lost sleep wondering how to ever get this far, you're not alone. I've spoken with so many people who carry that same fear, shame, and uncertainty. But I want you to know something important. There's always hope. There's always a way to bring calm back into your life, no matter how heavy that tax burden feels right now. Today, we're going to talk about key differences between resolving tax issues with the IRS and with California's Franchise Tax Board. And more importantly, how understanding those differences can help you finally move from fear to freedom. If you're ready to take that first step, gentle step forward relief, yes, you can visit taxreliefcall.com. Let's begin the journey together, one built on understanding, compassion, and the belief that peace of mind is possible. Stay with us for this very special episode so you can get to know the exact next steps to move forward with confidence and finally get the tax answers you deserve. And this week, we have a very special guest here, Leanne LaFrenz-Nickel, a California CPA with expertise in dealing with both the IRS and, guess what, the California Franchise Tax Board. So I'm going to say welcome, Leanne. Can you take a few moments to introduce yourself and share some of your background?
Yeah, thanks, Marcelino. Great to be here. Marcelino and I have known each other for a few years now. We are part of a tax rep network where I do a lot of speaking and training. And Marcelino has been a member and a very integral part in helping everyone, us around there in tax rep. So we very much appreciate that. And I, like he said, I am a California CPA. And I have a tax practice here in Southern California. We do some tax prep. I have staff that does that mainly. I am trying to mainly focus on actual tax representation with the IRS Franchise Tax Board. So I've done some EDD. I've done some California Department of Tax and Fee, which is like sales tax and stuff. So I have been a CPA since 2016. I've been an accountant pretty much my whole life since I was 20, which just what, a few years ago? Like
almost a few years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Just say how few, but you know, anyway. And I enjoy working in this field. It's always different. In no case, there's no two cases alike, even if they have the same issue. I just got an email before I got on here, a CDP hearing that we decided not to agree with. So now we have to file a tax court petition. So the main thing is a lot of people pay us for navigating all these, the way everything moves along within the IRS. So little fun facts about me. I enjoy roller skating. A lot of people know that. So I'm known as the CPA skater. And also something new in my life, I am now going to be lead vocal singer in a classic rock band, which is going to be kind of fun. So somehow I'll try to work taxes into that. I'm not sure how, but somehow I'll be doing that. And so now we're in a government shutdown, actually, right now. And I just got a phone call momentarily about an hour ago from one of my cases, them saying that they're going to be furloughed. So that's going to be fun. So I'm not sure when we're going to circle back with that. But Marcelino is correct. I have wrote a few articles for a neighborhood paper, and I call it the America's Dirty Little Secret. And America's Dirty Little Secret is, guess what, guys? Tax debt. Tax debt is America's dirty little secret, because nobody sits around the Thanksgiving or Christmas table or the family and goes, hey, dude, I'm screwed out of $100,000. I owe the IRS. Who do you think I should call? Nobody does that. That's embarrassing, right? Shame, guilt, all these things. Same thing at work. Nobody sits around the break table or the, you know, water cooler and says, hey, dude, who do you think I can call? You know, help, you know, the IRS just took $50,000 out of my bank, right? Or whatever. Like, nobody's hucked about that. It is America's dirty little secret. So I've been kind of having fun with that title.
And yeah, that's an excellent title there. I need to kind of steal that from you then.
It's right. It's true, though, really nice, because it is, right?
It is very true. A lot of embarrassment and sleepless nights and shame all go along with not getting your taxes taken care of there. That's what we work to help people to be able to do, mm-hmm. Get rid of that shame and sleep better at night there. So we'll go ahead and jump right into our little topic today. And the California Franchise Tax Board ever goes through a government shutdown. At least I'm not sure if they, I don't think they go through that. They're always on the prowl. So what do we look at when it comes to the biggest differences between the IRS and the California Franchise Tax Board with the way they handle tax debts and collections there? What have you encountered there?
Key differences, well, people don't know this, but the IRS, you can go back 3 years. So open tax year is considered only 3 years. They can only go back further if they find other significant issues going on, meaning fraud or like things like that. IRS is 3 years. California is 4. So there's open tax year. One more we've got that we're working on. And I actually am working a franchise tax board audit right now for 2021. And the clock is ticking on it. And I'm still waiting for them to issue their findings because, of course, I do not agree with them. That is a whole story that we'll get into in a bit. It's quite fun, very entertaining. Key differences are the 4-year open tax year rule, and they have a 20-year collection statute period versus 10 for the IRS. IRS is 10, California is 20, so they can come after you. California is also lazy. They don't like to have their own stand. I know they don't sound lazy, but they kind of are in this respect. They don't generally do a lot of individual standalone audits, to be honest with you. Very, very few. They're more interested in corps and things like that. Now, they will, however, piggyback off of anything the IRS is doing. So if there's an IRS issue going on, like an audit or a change of assessment or something like that, California, I'd be like, oh, they must have some kind of radar. If you want my honest opinion, I think they're calling each other and telling it. They have told me before that, oh, We do share information. Thank you very much. How helpful are you? So yeah, they do that. So a lot of times when the tax professional is working an IRS case, and I'm sure they do this with other states. I don't think it's just limited to California, but I know that they do that with California. They like to share and tell each other what's happening. So just when you think you've got the IRS problem quashed, usually close towards when that's closing, then all of a sudden you'll get a letter from the franchise tax board and you'll be like, okay, well, now we got to deal with this. So always something to take into consideration when there is an audit like that going on.
Yes. Or if they've underreported their income to the IRS, correct?
Well, then, that kind of puts then of course, that also is going to affect the state also. I mean, that's just kind of a no-brainer. So generally, if you have to amend something or, you know, you should take into account the state. Obviously, you need to, right, as far as that goes.
Yeah.
And one of the questions that Marcelino had given me prior to this was, this is a really, really interesting, good one, too. If they owe the IRS and the franchise tax board, which one should they address first? Generally, in my opinion, I tell my clients to pay the state first, to try to take care of the state first, because there's a lot of strategy in dealing with the state over the IRS. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, we both know that sometimes if you're doing an offer, let's just say an offer and compromise, for instance, if they've got state tax debt that they can't pay in full, get the state filed first, get the payment plan in place, and then that kind of goes precedence against the IRS debt and the OIC and helps to lower that. Generally speaking, the state is going to have lower tax debt than the IRS, generally speaking, because the tax rates are lower at any rate. So I generally would like to address the state first and have them take care of that in any capacity that they can, because the franchise tax board is way more aggressive in collections than the IRS is, for sure. And there are several
ways. Well, I think that's the state thing.
Well, they're big on SFRs. So an SFR is a substitute for return. California loves this. And some of the cases I've had that have come from an SFR have been absolutely mind-boggling to me. And I saw there was a period of time, the very first one I ever saw was in 2018. My daughter, who actually works for me now, she does all of my tax prep. Before she got married and pregnant and all that kind of wonderful stuff, she was a hairdresser. She did hair. See? Yes. So she had a license from the cosmetology department of California Board of Cosmetology. And once she got married, she went to college and she didn't work. She's a stay-at-home mom and went to college full time. And she wasn't actively working as a cosmetologist, but she kept her license up to date because she just figured, you know, you never know, right, kind of thing. So she got a letter from the franchise tax board saying, hey, we don't have a tax return filed for you. You have a license and there's no tax return filed.
Interesting. That is very nice. So in Colorado, they call it DORA, Department of Regulatory Agencies. So whatever they call it in California, obviously they talk. I mean, I don't know if that happens in Colorado. At least I haven't seen it in Colorado. But obviously, those agencies are interconnected, it sounds like, in California. Mm-hmm. So if you have this license, you must have done business, it sounds like. So you owe us money or you need to file a tax return.
That was my first encounter with that. And I was like you, I was floored because I was like, I don't even. So basically what we had to do was prove to them that, we sent over the return. She did a married filing joint with her husband and she's not working and all this kind of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But since then, I've had several cases of these. Most of them are these. They either have a real estate license with the realtor board. So in California, it's called the Bureau of Consumer Affairs, and they're the ones that issue all these licenses, right? I was a general contractor at one point. I had a contracting business, and so I had a licensed general contractor that way. I have a CPA license through the Board of Accountancy, but it's all under the Bureau of Consumer Affairs, which is the barbering and cosmetology, which is the realtors, which is general contractors, which is Board of Accountancy and, you know, all these things, doctors, lawyers, you know, probably everybody that any kind of a license. So they start looking. And if you don't have something matching up that you didn't file, now, if you're filing a W-2 within that industry, you're fine. They're looking for self-employment income that hasn't been reported. That's what they're looking for. So what they like to do is they like to basically say, you know what, you didn't file a Schedule C for it. We're going to help you out here and we're going to file it for you. Right. And by the way, you owe $1,000 or $100,000, like, or some ridiculous amount. And the clients are freaking out. They're like, what's happening? The easy solution is to just file the actual return, which lowers everything, and then, you know, go from there. But
yeah. It sounds like they use some type of averaging on there when they do that to come up with these numbers, because Colorado does something similar with sales tax.
Mm-hmm. I think it's some kind of maybe a benchmark industry, something like that. Now, here's another one. Here's another one that I had like 5 or 6 cases of these. And there was a point in time where it seemed like they were just doing it a lot. And the client had no license of anything. And they didn't file, and they were showing, oh, we estimated your income at, like, say, $150,000 or whatever it is. Of course, then you get slammed with a huge tax bill. So I'm looking at this, and I'm pulling their transcripts. I'm like, where in the world did they come up with this gross number? I'm always trying to figure out, like, stay one step ahead. I'm trying to figure out their mindset on this and how they're coming up with these numbers. With the substitute for returns that they're filing for the licensing, I think they're using, I haven't quite cracked that code yet, but I'm pretty sure they're probably using benchmarks or industry averages. However, the other ones are, so what I came to notice was, so people who own a home and had a mortgage, the mortgage company will file a Form 1098 that is a mortgage interest statement. That goes to the IRS, which is reported for all the interest that you paid that you're allowed to subsequently deduct on your tax return. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if there was a mortgage interest statement, California is like, if you have a mortgage, you obviously are making money. So we're going to file a return for you. This is what they're doing now. So they would take they would take the mortgage interest amount, multiply it by 6. How they got 6, I don't know, but it's been consistent. Every time I've gotten one of these, I took the 1098, multiplied it by 6, and that's where we got the number. So they're using a factor of 6. Don't know why, but they are. So that's another one that they're doing is if you have a mortgage, they're like, oh, again, sorry, you didn't file a return. We're going to help you out because we're so helpful. I'm from the government and I'm here to help. So we're going to help you.
Famous last words from Ronald Reagan, right. If the government says, I'm here to help you, watch out.
Run the other way, right? Yeah.
How about when we look at collection process, when it comes to the IRS and the franchise tax board? speed, communication, enforcement. What do we often see there?
Speed is definitely on the California side as far as that goes. They are way more aggressive at levying and garnishing wages than the IRS, from what I have noticed. Mm-hmm. Definitely quicker and faster and more aggressive on that. Definitely.
Yeah. I think that's true across most states, though, because I've seen that happen in Colorado as well, where the tax debt, so boom, it's like there, and you got to jump on it quite quick. I've had some people call me in some pretty desperate situations and dealing with, oh, I got this garnishment from the state, and what am I going to do, and all these other things. Mm-hmm. Usually that's an indication there's other issues. So, yeah, definitely can happen there. So when it comes to resolution programs, people hear about on the radio and stuff about payment plans, offers and compromise there. What do we see the difference between the two agencies there in your experience?
So one thing that I like to, that just kind of came down the pike, California was real. See, in the world of the IRS, it's a lot easier to abate penalties than very, very hard to abate interest. Although I've had it abated before, but very difficult to abate interest. A little easier to abate penalties with on the side of the IRS. Now, the Franchise Tax Board is like, oh, we don't abate squat. They're basically like, screw you, you're paying it all, right? However, they have now a new first-time penalty abatement program. They started it. Mm-hmm. However, the one downside, I guess, is it's only good for tax year 2022 and going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if it's, and how I found out about this was I have a Franchise Tax Board case with a client who had, remember I said 20 years, right? He has old debt from 06 and 07. Okay, now we're rounding third on the CSEDs, right? With California, CSED is a collection statute expiration date, which is 20 years in California. So he had a wage garnishment in place from his employer. And he came to help me, and this was very easy to fix because they filed two substitute for returns for that gentleman for that year. Because he had two 1099s that were quite large of about 160, 200 grand each.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was in the mortgage business at that time, or real estate industry, making quite a bit of money. So what was odd about this case, not all odd, what was odd about this case is when I actually pulled his transcripts, his federal returns were filed for those years, for 07 and 06. But California shows nothing, which I find a little bit suspect, because generally speaking, most people will file both simultaneously unless there's a reason. Mm-hmm. Of course, trying to prove that we filed for California and it was lost or ended up in somebody's ditch would be quite challenging. So I just decided to redo it, right? To just refile it. Of course, we have to paper file it. Now, I like the thing with the Franchise Tax Board because I can call the agents and I can actually fax it directly to them. So their processing time cuts down to about 3 weeks when that happened. That's good. Obviously, I was able to amend the returns and lower his tax debt significantly. So I wanted to go and get the first-time penalty abatement because I had heard about it. So I called up. I was going to save him about $6,000 on one of the years, right? And they said, oh, no, this is only good for 2022 going forward. So that's how I found out. And however, I'm still going to try and do a penalty abatement through California. So that is to be continued to find out how that goes.
Well, that's encouraging to hear that they have that.
Yeah, and they do have offer and compromise programs. I have never done one in California. I would love to do one. I'm just not sure how savvy they are or if they just deny them. Now, I have noticed that California is starting to be, dare I say, a little more kinder and gentler with stuff because they're now doing the first-time penalty abatement situation. They've got that. Back in 2019, they started a program to basically dissolve entities. So Marcelino and I have seen this multiple times. We have clients coming in. Oh, I have like two or three LLCs that I formed and, you know, I don't do anything with them and they just sit there and they're nothing going on. But at the same time, you have the, you're accruing all these state fees. At California, you pay $800 a year, whether, you know, doesn't really matter. So these fees are accruing. They're not paying them. Interest and penalties are accruing. The next thing you know, they're, you know, getting hate mail and garnishments and levies and all this stuff for these kinds of entities that are just sitting there stagnant, not doing anything. California implemented a voluntary dissolution program. This was glorious. I found this out because I had a client that owed $56,000 of all these, of everything that accrued over the years, right? Because he just didn't do anything. Right. And he was freaking out. I filed the form. I have to look it up. Don't quote me. It's a 3850 something. I have to look it up. Anyway, filed that. It was brand new. I was one of the first people to do it. It was back in 2019. And it was a voluntary dissolution. And that $56,000 just evaporated into the air.
Wow, that's some good news there to be able to just set that aside, their voluntary program like that. It's, that's actually good to hear. I mean, I'm not as familiar with California, which is why this is actually very educational for me, being able to get these deals. And we were discussing earlier, I just did a tax return for a client who sold a property in California. All they did was sell. They haven't lived in California for years. They just had a property sold there. And so they got to pay California, but they didn't make estimated payments. And plus, they didn't pay by April 15th. So now, it's funny, I'm sitting here talking about this. I'm wondering, would this person possibly qualify for this first-time abatement deal that you were mentioning?
I don't see why not. I would give it a whirl.
Okay, it's good. That's good to know, because I was already warning her, you're going to get a letter from California for this.
I'll email you the phone number to call, Marcelina.
Okay, yeah, we'll work on that definitely then. So how often are, when we talk about tax surprises or tax debt surprise, we talked about that a little bit earlier, Cap, we know it happens with the IRS, but obviously it happens with California too, doesn't it?
Surprising, like what way? The clients aren't aware of it, or?
Yeah, like the clients weren't aware of it. Like they get this bill, or maybe they get a bill they didn't think they owed it, or maybe there's just a disagreement. Or as we talked about earlier, the California just does this random amount of money that they think they made because they have a license there. I mean, is that
correct? Those are the big ones I see. The substitute for returns for the people who have some type of a license that they're not filing a return on, or the mortgage interest statements is another big one that they do for the mortgage interest statement. Remember, I said they multiply it by six and they tend to fill. So now a new surprise. This is a new one, not necessarily with the Franchise Tax Board, but the EDD. So the EDD is payroll, okay? So if you're an S-Corp, if you're either a bona fide legal S-Corp entity, or if you are taxed as an S-Corp with the IRS's permission, you are required as a shareholder of that S-Corp to have reasonable compensation, okay? So what California EDD has done, I just literally just found this out a month ago. They are sending bills to taxpayers saying, oh, here's your payroll bill, even though you weren't on payroll.
And, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Here's your payroll. We assessed $28,000 of payroll for you for like first quarter. And here's your bill. And here's all your interest and penalties on top of everything else. No notice, no letter, no asking. Hey, are you going to do payroll? Are you an active? Nothing. Just here's the bill. You want to talk about a surprise?
Whoa. That is a huge surprise. That's on like qualified S corps. Did I get that correctly?
Correct. Yes.
Well, of course, they should be on payroll anyway. So
they should be. They should be. Yes. So there's that fun little nugget.
Basically, if you're an S corp shareholder, you need to be on payroll.
Definitely.
That's what the lesson of that is by itself there. That's just based in California.
Yeah. You've already got issues with the IRS, and now you're going to just double down with the California.
Yeah. Yep. So that's best to avoid that entirely. So anyway, moving on here, because penalties and interest, those are always fun thing there. So how do those look at as far as for a person's like total balance? We know it can be pretty significant with the IRS, but do we see that pretty same kind of significance in comparison with the Franchise Tax Board?
Oh, yeah. No, they're very happy-go-lucky with the interest and penalties accruing. Mm-hmm. Yep, they're very fun. They definitely like the gift that keeps on giving. Yeah.
Yes, but at least it sounds like they got a first-time abatement program now, at least. So that's actually
they do.
That's actually
they
a little
do.
Bit of relief there for these.
They do.
At least
of course,
2022
if you have tax debt older than 2022, you're kind of why they picked 2022, I couldn't even tell you. Back to that voluntary dissolution program, the main reason why they started changing some of these things up is because I believe it was costing them more for collections than it was to actually carry the debt, I guess, on their books or something. So the enforcement was costing them more money. So that's why I was kind of hopeful. Okay, well, now with the penalties and interest, now that they're going to start giving us penalty abatements, maybe the same goes for that. You know, the enforcement maybe is higher than, I'm not sure, but I don't know why they picked 2022. I don't know why they wouldn't open it for, remember, like, well, I mean, at least 4 years. Well, maybe that's, no, it's 2022. The 4 years, it should have been 21. I don't know why they picked 2022. I would at least hope it'd be the last four open years. Yeah.
Well, kind of relates to how do they pick six for the mortgage interest statements that we talked about earlier.
I think they put numbers in a hat and they have a meeting and pull it out. I'm pretty sure.
That's honestly how I can feel about that. I can agree with you on that wholeheartedly there.
Sure.
So
they're doing shots at the bar, and whoever can do the most shots, that's the number where you're the pick.
That's how I feel sometimes with the way the state, that's how I feel about Colorado sometimes and the way they fix things. And sometimes even with the IRS, it seems like, how do we come up with that number?
I know.
What's the basis for that?
Exactly.
So in what ways can you say that the Franchise Tax Board can be less flexible or even more aggressive when it comes to negotiations or with the taxpayers?
Actually, you want to hear something crazy? I think that they're quite flexible when they're actually being audited. Now, I've had two occasions. So the very first California audit, Franchise Tax Board audit, remember I told you as a general rule, California doesn't do standalone audits, but this client was being audited. It started at the sales tax level, the CDTFA, then it morphed into an IRS audit, then it triple morphed into the franchise. So they were just getting it from all sides, right? Then it morphed.
Oh my.
Right. Then it morphed into the Franchise Tax Board. When I actually won this audit, I actually got a no change audit on all 3 years they were auditing. So,
excellent work.
Right. So I got no change on all 3 years. When I first responded to the IRS audit with the auditor, I then subsequently sent the same information to Franchise Tax Board. And their response was, just let us know what the IRS says and we'll just do what they say. I was actually quite floored because I had heard so many, this was when I was brand new, I was super green, I had no experience. And I thought, my goodness, and I had heard horror stories that the state was just basically going to spit you up and chew you out, whichever way that goes. And that's what I was scared of. And when they were just like, just let us know when you get the no change letter, just let us know and we'll just update our records. So that's the first one. Second one is a current audit I have right now. We're arguing over, it was another California resident. They had a rental house in Massachusetts. The tax preparer prepared the sale of the rental on the California 540. That's the form that's used. There's also a form, a CA 540, which kind of basically reconciles differences between the IRS and the state, what's taxable, what's not. Because California doesn't like always to conform to the IRS. They do on some things, but a lot of things they don't. So for whatever reason, this tax preparer made a huge blunder on this return and removed the $213,000 capital gain. So, right. So subsequently, California did audit them. I mean, I'm not surprised because there's a huge gain here that was not on their California return. So I corrected that. Basically, they were auditing it. They wanted all of this information. I basically amended the return, gave it to the agent. I was literally in this very spicy conversation with them because they literally had no idea what they were talking about. Literally had no idea at all. They were treating this house like it was a personal residence, and they wanted me to add all of the improvements to the basis of the property, ignoring any kind of recapture of depreciate or any. It was a nightmare. It was ridiculous. So I told her, I said, look, I said, then just issue your letter and I'll appeal it. I said, or I need to talk to your supervisor. So I've talked to the supervisor, had that conversation with him, and he's still kind of floundering around with not knowing what I'm talking about, even though I subsequently sent two emails with the IRC showing what it says that I can do with this. Mm-hmm. And I have actually yet to hear from them right now. I'm actually quite surprised. I haven't heard anything because, in my opinion, the audit's done. He's like, we're going to research this, what you've sent and what you've said, and we're going to issue a final determination letter. I think it's been, what, Denise, a month?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, that we haven't heard anything yet from them. So this one is to be continued. I'm kind of curious how this one's going to roll.
Sounds like things with the IRS sometimes to be continued, like when I'm still waiting on, been waiting on for a year now anyway. On an overtaxed situation or double tax situation that I'm dealing with on the IRS. So, but at least most of the time, the state, like California, will be shorter than a year or six months.
It was crazy because I even told the guy, look, the people owe the money. Like, I actually calculated how much it should have been if it had been done right the first time. They received a $6,000 refund that they should never have gotten. So they have to pay that back, plus the additional tax of $1,500 that they should have owed, right, when they first filed the return. And I told him, I said, I'm not even asking for a no change audit. I'm just asking for it to be correctly stated. And their advice to me was redo the whole thing and almost create no gain. No, I'm not even joking. I wish I could make this up. And I actually really struggled with this one because I'm thinking to myself, yeah, this is really going to help my client, but I don't trust them. Because if we agree to this, I told my client, I said, look, I would rather you just pay the money, to be honest with you. And so I'm actually generating a bill for the Franchise Tax Board, and they can't seem to agree even on that one because they don't.
Oh, my.
I should kind of give them money. Yeah.
Oh, that is wild, the deals we go through in dealing with the taxing agencies. But that's who we're dealing with and trying to help clients sleep better at night. And sometimes they do have to pay, and sometimes the clients do owe, which is really weird sometimes with getting the taxing agency to recognize, yes, they owe, to send a bill. Yeah, which is odd. Seems like they're really good at sending bills, but when you want them to send a bill, they don't send the bill.
I know. I even went back and forth. I'm like, I thought about just having the client pay it just to stop like the accruing of interest and penalties because I know that they owe this money. Mm-hmm. But the Franchise Tax Board is like, no. And it's not easy getting money switched around. I have another case where the client, we filed the return, and this was actually an error on our part. We filed a return for 2024, and we, human error, instead of 24,000 of gross rents, we put, I think it was 240. I think we left off a zero, or 2,400 or something like that. And his balance, he was due a refund that we then rolled, like applied to next year's estimated tax payments. So it's like on the books for next year, parlayed the bet, I call it. And when we figured out that it was done incorrectly, we quickly corrected it before the April 15th deadline. So we filed what's called a superseded return, right? So I calculated that his refund should have been $130 versus $2,000 and whatever it was at that time. Well, when I called the Franchise Tax Board, they're telling me that they can't move that. So now he's got this $2,000-some-odd credit. Now he has to pay it again.
Oh, my.
I know. I'm like, dude, his refund should have been less. You know, just do something on the computer, fix it. No.
Apparently,
that's the thing. So that's why, back to my other one with the rental for the $7,500 that they owed, I was thinking about that. I'm like, you know, if I go have them pay this, It's going to be floating around there in FTB land, and Lord knows where it's going to land.
I like that. FTB land. That sounds like IRS land. So,
like Disneyland.
Yeah, kind of like Disneyland. Yeah.
So we definitely have that out there in California. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, makes sense there. Yeah.
FTB land is a not a fun place to be. There's no Mickey and Minnie Mouse over there.
No, definitely not if you're in that land. Yep.
Yeah.
So how about the way maybe they handle the like wage garnishments, bank levies, tax liens? What's the differences that you've encountered there in dealing with those particular things with the Franchise Tax Board compared to like the IRS?
I have yet to see an IRS wage garnishment. I would say to all of the clients that come to me that have any kind of a wage garnishments from the Franchise Tax Board, and it's usually at 25%, right? They usually just don't negotiate anything lower. Because I have that same case I told you about where he had from 06 and 07. That one I tried to, once I got the balance lowered down and majority of it, he still had a remaining balance due, which we're fine with and we understand. I was trying to actually get it out of wage garnishment and into an installment agreement.
Mm-hmm.
No can do. Absolutely not. It's like a shark. Once they lock onto you, they're not budging.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. And I do tend to agree with you. I haven't really seen an IRS wage garnishment. I've usually that it comes from the state. I've seen Colorado issue those. And so it seems like the state garnishments are much more common than an IRS garnishment is.
Yep. I have yet to see one.
Usually works.
I'm not saying they don't exist. The only thing I've seen with wage garnishments is if a taxpayer for the IRS, if you're claiming exempt, a lot of people like to change their W-4s throughout the year, run fast and loose with that and claim exempt from taxes, and then they forget to switch it back or they just don't care and they just don't have any withholding, the IRS actually will send a letter to their employer mandating that they have to claim single and zero for like the next 3 years if they don't get their act together. So that's about the only kind of like employment type of situation letter that I've seen with the IRS versus the Franchise Tax Board. So, yeah.
Do you see much in tax liens with the Franchise Tax Board?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. I don't think I've seen one. Most of the ones I've seen where I've tried to either get subordinate, like lifted so they can refinance or something like that, generally have been only IRS. I haven't actually dealt with any state liens, but I'm sure that
I'm sure they happen too. But once again, it's one of those areas I really haven't seen either. So
I haven't seen it, but I'm sure one day it'll come flying across my desk.
Well, you're dealing with tax. You're about to see everything at some point. So that's definitely coming there. Yeah. But I do, once again, the IRS seems to be much more aggressive on doing liens than states do in this case, or at least states, maybe the states vary definitely on that. Or if they do them or when they do them, it's probably obviously case by case, but yet not too often. Like I said, because I haven't seen them. I usually will see the wage garnishment before I see anything like that when it comes to the state level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about mistakes taxpayers make? They make mistakes in filing taxes or in dealing with the Franchise Tax Board or the IRS. Where can those mistakes with the Franchise Tax Board hit them a little harder than it would with the IRS?
So this happens a lot with seniors that I've seen or with people who are taking some kind of a distribution from their 401k or IRA or some kind of a tax deferred savings account. When they're taking a distribution from it, they will have taxes withheld on the federal side. But for some reason, they either forget about, don't care, or fail to have the taxes withheld on the state side. And I'm not sure if that's on the fault of the taxpayer or on the fault of the people initiating the withdrawal. You know, they'll send you usually a form to fill out or something. So that seems to be a huge blunder that I've seen. They just, for some reason, forget about the state.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly why that happens either. I do know it sounds like California may be just like Colorado in that sense, where it may not be a mandated state withdrawals. Because some states, when you do take money out of a retirement, say you have to take out X amount. Colorado doesn't have that. And obviously, it sounds like California doesn't have that requirement either.
They're not.
What you're saying. And that's something I encounter a lot too in Colorado is the fact of, the federal taxes are always withheld, but then they're like, well, state? Oops. Forget about the state. So, it's always the oops on the state there. Yeah. Now, I don't know if California has it, since you're talking about retirement. Colorado does exclude anywhere from 20 to 24,000 of retirement income, depending on your age. So which helps out those in that particular age bracket. But I don't know if California does anything like that. With
California, drop a bill on your grave. Are you kidding me?
Okay, well, that's news to me. So I didn't know that, but now I know that. So, okay.
If they could, they would.
Oh, okay. Well, I always tell people this as far as retirement, which is why they run into that, is that before they take money out of a retirement plan, 99% of the time, they don't talk to a tax professional or talk to their tax professional. They just do it. Because I end up seeing these things at the end of the year with some people. And maybe you see that, or I should say your daughter sees that helps you out there.
Yeah.
Sees that. They didn't come talk to her ahead of time to do that. They just go and do it. So anyway.
Right. Another big blunder I have noticed too is they will retire. They lived in California, worked in California, and, you know, they actually accumulated either their pension plan or IRA, whatever you want to call it, when they were living in California. They move generally to another state with no state income tax to retire. Mm-hmm. And I've seen this where they forget or don't know. So they're having California withholding this whole time.
And still, oh, my goodness.
I've seen that too, living in Florida or Texas. And I always tell them every year, we're only filing this California return to get your refund back of the money you're having withheld. You need to call and have this switch. Sometimes it goes on for like 2-3 years. I don't know why they just don't make that phone call and have it. So they have to call their benefits administrator, whoever's doing that. They just switch it, you know, over. So I don't know. That's another. Don't give them any more money than they don't need it.
They need. Yeah. You know, that's actually something I've encountered too, now that I think about it, in the past of, and I've seen that. I'm like, why do you have California withholding on this?
Yes.
And then, yeah. And I have to give them that same bit of advice, is get this fixed, because we don't have.
And then we have to charge them for another state return. And we don't really want to do that. I mean, we want to make money. I get it, but not at the, you know, not for something that's avoidable.
Yeah. So. Definitely there. So now we've been going through this, and we both do representation work. So when it comes to working with a professional representative or someone that does representation work, like myself, an enrolled agent, or yourself, like a CPA, how does that help to navigate when you're talking between the IRS and the Franchise Tax Board at the same time to get to that full resolution there?
You mean as far as...
What I'm thinking about is where, when it comes to working with someone to help you help the taxpayer navigate through these items there, how does working with the representative or someone who can navigate these difficult waters, having to navigate through these things, and sometimes both agencies at the same time?
Yeah, so they definitely want to, okay, here's a huge misnomer. They don't need a tax attorney unless it's literally a criminal situation. They don't need a tax attorney. A lot of people think if I have an IRS problem or franchise tax work problem, I have to hire a tax attorney. No. In order to represent, and this also qualifies for California, and there's another designation also in California, the California Tax Education Council, CTEC, CTEC.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's another license that you can have in California if you don't want to be an EA or a CPA. You actually can represent taxpayers in front of the Franchise Tax Board if you have that designation. So in California, you have to be a CTEC, EA, CPA, or tax attorney. IRS, EA, CPA, or tax attorney only. Mm-hmm. Okay. And in the eyes of the IRS, those three designations, we have the same rights as a tax attorney. So like I said, so unless it's a criminal offense, sorry, tax attorneys, but we all have the same, we're all playing in the same sandbox. Okay. So we all have the same toys that we play with. Okay. You have to share, but a lot of times tax attorneys don't like to, you know, so a lot of people, that is a huge misnomer. And I've been kind of on a thing trying to educate people. You don't need to necessarily get a tax attorney. Like my firm is a little smaller, so we're a little bit more personalized versus like a big tax firm or, you know, anything like that. And sometimes I will actually give clients, I'm not necessarily super cheap, but sometimes if they've got a small case, I'll kind of relatively charge accordingly, not as much as I normally would. There are a lot of small cases that need to be dealt with. And some other smaller ones too, my daughter is a CTEC in California, so she can deal with some of those smaller ones on the Franchise Tax Board site. So that kind of does make it easier as far as that goes. So definitely want someone who is as knowledgeable of how everything works. Mm-hmm. And that's where you and I know a tax rep comes in. If you're representing people, you need that assistance. So
yes, definitely get that help there. Hey, Leanne, it's been a great conversation today. Some great insights for myself. I learned a lot about California there, and it's surprisingly, in some instances, it's actually a little easier than I thought it was.
Yes, there. I was surprised.
Really good to know that.
Yeah.
So just keep in mind, depending what the issue is, you got Leanne in California, you got me here in Colorado. So keep in mind as we move forward on this. And again, I thank you, Leanne, so much there.
Awesome.
As a concluding thought here, remember, whether it's the IRS or the California Franchise Tax Board, every tax problem carries more than numbers. It carries the emotion, the worry, and the hope of a fresh start.
Yes.
Remember, you don't have to face either agency alone. With the right guidance, every letter, every notice, and every phone call can lead you closer to peace. If you're ready to put your tax worries behind you, visit www.taxreliefcall.com today. And let's take this next step together toward calm, clarity, and financial freedom. Until next time, I'm Marcelino Dodge reminding you there's always a way forward, and it begins with taking that first step toward relief.